Hello, you are listening to People, Pets, and Vets with a registered veterinary technician, Angel Martin, and Dr. Brad Miller.
Hey.
We decided to shake things up a little bit this week and allow me to do the intro amid all of the other
craziness.
Unprecedented things that are going on.
Yeah.
So welcome to the podcast, guys. Wanted to say each week we bring you current events in the news and in our veterinary industry, and we share our thoughts and our perspective on how they impact us in the animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and a behind the scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This is episode number 54. It's being brought to you by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. We are broadcasting from cloudy, cool, rainy Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Grim, dewy, yucky Lawrenceville, Georgia.
Had we recorded yesterday, we could have said beautiful, 80-degree, fantastic, sunny.
I talked to my family in Texas yesterday, and I think it was kind of this way, maybe a little bit cooler there. But yeah, I was just like super happy how nice it was yesterday. Spring is here. Things blooming. It's warm. Parks were very crowded, busy. But other than that, it was a beautiful day.
So, yeah, yesterday was beautiful. Today, not so much. The next couple of days are going to be kind of gloomy, rainy again. And then hopefully spring truly will be among us after that.
Yeah. So, all right. So we're not really scripting much of today. Usually we do look at things that happened this past week. We talk about, you know, anything interesting case-wise, anything happened with anybody that works with us or for us. And then we get into the current news and events. And so obviously the most pressing and really the only current event that
anyone is reporting on
is, is COVID-19.
Yeah.
So last week we kind of quickly, I feel like, went through a bunch of the terms and words associated with what we're kind of having to live as our reality these days. Maybe that was helpful. Maybe not. I don't know.
I hope so. I mean, there's so much information, and I say this to you almost every day, and those people in my family as well. There's so much information out there. It is unreal. And so the fact that hopefully we're able to kind of, I don't know, declutter some of that and at least give people some background to some of the words that are out there, I think it's helpful.
Yeah. So one we always do a word of the week, and I was going to use novel, N-O-V-E-L, because that is in the news. They're talking about the novel coronavirus.
I think it's important to stick with novel. We talked about maybe changing it up and sticking with something with the I, but
we can't do both?
We can if you want to. Okay. I think novel is important for people to understand because it seems like it's just one of those words that gets placed in front of other words, and we don't really know the definition of it. At least I would think majority of people don't.
Right. Maybe they do after this story, but novel basically means new.
Yep. So I looked up some synonyms. It's not cinnamon, but synonyms.
M&Ms.
New, strange, modern, recent, all those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Are similar to novel.
Yeah. So it's important because this is a new virus to the, I guess, from thought to have jumped from animal, whether it's bat, snake, reptile, we don't know, into the human population. We typically, in our everyday conversations, use novel as it relates to food allergy.
We do, yeah. And so you diagnosed my dog with basically a food allergy,
right?
Also Adipy, right? Which we can go down that road if you want to. But he was eating a science diet chicken kibble. Chicken was the main protein source in it.
Yeah.
And so, granted, it also had grains and those other things. But once he, in his 10-year-old self, started developing this chronic itching and wouldn't go away.
Lots of dermatitis. Yep.
Skin wasn't itchy, always infection. Seasonal. Yeah. You suggested that he go on a novel protein diet.
Right.
And so
in this case, novel meant something new that he had never seen before that we were aware of.
Right.
And we chose
kangaroo. So seems kind of weird, but there is a Royal Canin Veterinary Diets actually has a specific prescription diet that has kangaroo as the main protein source. And so a lot of your commercial diets that you're going to find in like the grocery stores and things like that are going to have chicken, beef, lamb. You may find some fish diets, but novel is essentially like what your dog has never eaten before. So if your dog has always been on a chicken diet, you could potentially go to fish and that could be considered novel. But some diets also have them kind of mixed in, where you'll have some chicken meal, some beef meal, some other things like that. So kangaroo is the cleanest novel protein that we could find for Fonzie.
Yeah, the hardest thing about food allergy is really diagnosing it and getting your pet on the right diet. And it's really hard to know what they're not allergic to.
Oh, sure.
You just don't know until, you know, it's via trial and error or food trial. So
that's what I was going to say. So there are some allergy tests out there, right? So there definitely are allergy tests for dogs. We'll leave it to another day talk about how their accuracy and things. But for food allergies specifically, it is truly trial and error. So you'll hear the doctors suggest a food trial for dogs. And that's essentially where they go on nothing but a new protein or a novel protein for a period of time and see if their symptoms subside. So good news is Fonzie he's been eating kangaroo now for a couple of years. He does not have chronic allergies now. He's more of a seasonal dog, and so he gets a cytopoint injection seasonally when he is kind of at his worst. So any thoughts on your side there about allergies, novel proteins, atopy?
No, let's leave it at that.
Okay,
let's leave it at that.
Did you also have a word for the eye of the week?
So the eye word of the week, and maybe that's what we do. We do an eye word and something else. I don't know. But it's hypopyon.
Hypopyon.
H-Y-P-O-P-Y-O-N. Do you know what that means?
So is it hypoeon or hypopyon?
Hypopyon.
So hypo meaning like less?
H-Y-P-O. Hypo does mean less or beneath or under.
So is
and
that...
And then what does pio mean? P-I-P-Y-O or pion. What is pio? Pyometra.
I would think purulent.
Pyelonephritis.
Purulent discharge.
Pus. So beneath pus.
Okay.
Any clue?
You have... What was the other one? Ion?
Hypopyon.
Hypopyon. Pus under your eye? Pus in your eye?
Yeah, close. Pus in the anterior chamber of your eye.
Okay.
So an infection that gets in your anterior chamber in front of your pupil or your iris and your lens, and that the particulate matter, the white blood cells in particular, they're heavy. So they gravitate down and you will see this pus in the anterior chamber, but it's down in the lower part of that chamber.
So the way that you can see an anterior chamber is only with an ophthalmoscope.
Well, you can sometimes see it grossly, you know, with the use of a pen light and or using an ophthalmoscope.
And so you're looking through the pupil or through the black part of the eye.
No, through the cornea.
You're looking
so
through the cornea.
So it's in front of the colored part of the eye, the iris, you know, which defines the pupil.
Okay.
So not a whole lot of causes. I mean, if you get a systemic infection, it can localize in the eye. If you somehow have penetration to the globe of the eye or somewhere around the eye, you can see that. So we have a case.
Like a foreign object, like a dog who maybe gets a thorn in the eye?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have a case here today, which is why that's the word of the week.
Oh, interesting. So the case that's here today, was it traumatic?
We
don't know.
We don't really know what the etiology, which is another word of the week, which means cause, is. So, okay.
We're loaded with words today.
So let's just jump into COVID-19. And I don't know that we need to quote the ever-changing statistics. I can't keep up with exposures, you know, potential exposures, positive tests, deaths.
I mean,
know the generalities.
Definitely that information is available on an ever-changing basis on cdc.gov. And then also the Johns Hopkins University Systems website is available.
And like the Georgia Health Department, they update every day at noon those numbers.
Which is where the CDC gets their information from as well, right? They get it locally from states.
So I guess the biggest thing, you know, everybody is super familiar with what's going on, and you can listen to and see the news and stories just like we can. But let's talk a little bit about the impact it has had locally and personally on us in the hospital.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, basically on the 20th, just a few days ago, this past Friday, we decided to make some changes within the practice. Specifically being that we've closed our front doors to the public. We are not allowing our clients inside, which is again, unprecedented, right? Like, we've never locked the doors during the daytime before. Even when we have meetings and things like that, we're always here. We don't close for lunch. We always want to be available to our clients. And so it is kind of a different thing. I think our clients, thankfully, are being super receptive of it. We have not had any clients get upset with us over the fact that we're not allowing them in.
Well, few. There's the one-offs. A lot of people are super stressed these days.
They are stressed, but I think they understand. You know what I'm saying? It's not like we've put bars on the doors and we're only allowing them to talk to us through the bars. Right. You know what I mean? We are still having face-to-face interactions through virtual visits.
Right.
Which, I don't know, maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself. But basically, we've made the decision to not allow clients in. And so we are asking that all of our current clients download the PetPro Connect app, which gives us text message communications. It gives them access to their pets' records in case, you know, obviously they need to do something when we're not here. And then more importantly, it gives us the ability to have virtual conversations with them. So it gives us video consultation capabilities. And
in
so
real time, yeah.
Real time. So kind of like a FaceTime call. But for those people that are bringing their pets into the hospital, we're asking that they download that. We're initiating a call with them. And then they're basically outside in the parking lot. And we're inside with their pet. And we're able to facilitate those communications, to your point, real time. Ask them questions about symptoms and all that stuff. Let them know instantly, you know, what we need to do next, what the pricing might be. And the cases that I've personally dealt with, which are small in number, I guess, but have been super open to the idea. They've actually thanked me. We had a couple of teachers that I helped, and they were like, we're used to this now. I mean, this is what my life is going to be for the next few months with teaching and things like that. So I think majority of people are going to be okay with it.
Yeah, I think they are. And, you know, we're seeing sick patients. Every day is kind of like a Sunday for us. You know, we're open regular hours. We're seeing sick patients. We're seeing wellness as needed, when needed. We're trying to kind of defer some elective procedures and not, you know, recommend those be done currently under the situation. But we are trying to take care of the pets and the people who love them.
Absolutely.
These days. And
that's
so,
our mission.
You know, we put out a little video, I guess, Friday, where I was videotaped, you know, front and left, and kind of explaining to the clients why we're doing what we're doing and what that process looks like. We are hopefully by end of day Monday going to have a dedicated web page that has a couple of other people with some short little PSA, you know, announcements for our clientele so they understand what we're looking at. But yeah, super excited to be able to do the video consultation in the exam room. We're literally bringing the client into the room on a laptop, and we're able to have conversation and have that visual, not communication, but that whatever. I mean, everything's so visual these days, right?
And it's like if they were there. They're able to ask questions. Yeah. They can see the exam. You know, there's no question. Historically, in veterinary medicine, I think, you know, maybe our clients don't know this, but people have always been hesitant to bring their pet into the practice because, or not all people, but because their pet goes into the treatment area. They don't know what happens back there. Well, we're pretty proud to say that, you know, our treatment area is well equipped, and that oftentimes we'll take your pet back there because we have an extra set of hands, or we have the devices that we need, meaning blood draw supplies, that kind of thing. But now with this virtual visit, I mean, the clients are literally sitting in the exam room with us. They're still visualizing the exam that the doctors are doing. All of that is still the same.
So just a thought, off subject but not. One of the main reasons, everything you just said is spot on, but another major reason we will take a pet away from an owner, out of the exam room, back into treatment area, is because a lot of times pets are just like people going to a hospital. They can get super anxious. Mm-hmm. And when they're anxious, you know, I'm not going to say fearful because there's nothing really for them to fear, but it's just a strange situation or environment. They're kind of like a 1 or 2 year old. They're going to cling to their pet parent.
Oh, sure.
They're going to get underneath, you know, the legs if they can. They're going to get back in the corner. And then we have to, do the exam, get a temperature, draw blood. And it makes a bad situation worse. And so believe it or not, most pets, when separated from their owner, they will bond to the person walking them out of the room.
Absolutely.
And there's that trust factor, but there's also a little bit more maybe nervousness at this point to where they will tolerate us. It's amazing how much they tolerate us drawing blood, giving injections, you know, coming at their light with an eye, to look in their eye, to look to see do they have this hypopyon or not, looking in their ears, all the things we do without them being able to verbally understand. And so point being, is we are forced to use some of this technology to have a virtual visit these days. I think it's going to really improve what we do. And I guess where I was going, there may be a point to where an owner is able to stay, quote unquote, with their pet during the entire visit through video,
mm-hmm.
and see exactly what goes on, you know, in treatment areas and other areas of the hospital. We're not going to get there tomorrow, but we're trying to keep the pet parent involved in, you know, the healthcare decisions and delivery of that healthcare to their pet as much as they can. So, I've made this statement the last couple of days, and I talked to a couple of colleagues yesterday. As far as I know, we are the only clinic, and this is a overstatement because surely somebody is as smart as you who thought of this whole thing.
Aw, thanks.
But as far as I know, people are using telemedicine in our industry with the pet being at home and us being at our home or office, but we're trying to keep the pet separated, the pet parent and the pet separated from the hospital. We're actually bringing the pet into the hospital. We're separating the pet parent out in the parking lot. But then again, we're bringing that pet parent into the exam room.
Sure.
Versus them being at home, bringing us into their home, because there's major limitations there.
So if we can talk about that at home thing, right? So we've had the capability now for almost 2 years of doing telemedicine.
Right.
We've always struggled with, you know, what does it look like? Are people going to use it? And
how much good can we do?
Yeah. So essentially it's always been about triage. It is the person who maybe their dog jumped off the couch and broke a toenail and now the toenail is bleeding all over the place. And so we can coach them through things through telemedicine on what to do for their pet. But ultimately it is the point of where telemedicine used to be up until a couple days ago for us was you basically either tell them, no, it's fine. Or yes, bring your pet in. And
yep.
So now we are able to we can triage as well, right? We haven't really had clients using it that way, but more so what we're able to do is still see those pets, somewhat decrease the time between those visits, you know, we're seeing the pet and we're still communicating with the client via this quote unquote telemedicine or telehealth aspect of things.
Right. It's not all just via telephone. There's huge value there. We are more efficient on our end. Clients are having less wait time this way.
For sure.
So it's kind of a win-win situation, and yet we're continuing to kind of evolve. Because we're being forced to, right? So either change or get left behind.
So one thing I did want to mention, so we're talking about those appointments and procedures and things like that we're doing. We are still seeing, as you mentioned, most cases, wellness, like if we have young puppies or naive puppies that need to be vaccinated or kittens, we are doing those things. But more so, our curbside service is still available if your pet needs a refill on medication, if you need a refill of your dog food. So
whole point in going curbside, maybe there's several, but number one, we're trying to protect our staff and we're trying to stay open for business and not get exposed and, you know, have a positive tester here to where we have to quarantine our entire staff in hospital.
Right.
We're trying to be available to our clientele and their pets. And if we get sick, we can't be available.
Right.
And so we're limiting what comes into the hospital. We're not so concentrated on what leaves the hospital because we're sending, to your point, food, RX, you know, refills, the pets back out. But we're trying to practice that social distancing. We are recommending that our clients, for the most part, stay in their cars. They don't get out, start interacting with other pet parents, keep their distance. We actually have lanes at Russell Ridge. We have eight parking spots or lanes that the clients can pull up to. They can let us know where they are. We send a staff member out. For the most part, we're asking them to hand the lease to the staff member or hand the cat carrier to the staff member, and just trying to limit that contact. But every situation is a little bit differently. I know on Friday we had an emergency or two to where we kind of needed to rush out and get the pet and bring them in the hospital very quickly. So ever evolving and ever changing, but...
So just one little blurb about the things leaving the practice, and I hope it goes without saying, but we are in the clinic still, even though people are not allowed in. We are doing extra cleaning and things like that. So certainly we are spraying down our packages from FedEx and UPS when they come in. And so hopefully those things that you're getting when you leave are also decontaminated and that kind of thing. So we are still doing all of those other extras, even though there aren't outsiders coming into the practice.
What day are we into the president's 15 days of...
Is tomorrow 7?
I was going to say of hell, because that's what it feels like, to be quite honestly, around here. But
so I really couldn't tell you, because I see people on Facebook again, which is where I get a ton of my information from. But, you know, everyone has like a different quarantine, and they're doing like hashtag quarantine day 7. So I forget when he put his out. I think it was on the 14th. So
I feel like we're about 6 or 7 days into it.
I think Monday might be 7 days.
My hopes are that we can get by another week. Very similar to where we are now, although I predict the numbers are going to go up as we continue to test more and more exposure happens. But I'm hopeful that operationally and client visit wise that we're very comparable to where we are now.
Yeah, for sure. I hope so too.
I guess one other thing. So I would encourage people to go to our website, mygavet.com. The landing page at the very top, there's an update COVID-19 spot you can click. We're building out this second page.
That will take you to an informational. So if you click that, it'll say like read more. That'll take you to an informational page. And then to your point, the second page that we're building out is more so not necessarily
for us
information about COVID-19, but it's like our response to it. What are we doing? How are we making things safer for people and pets?
And we're going to push out some of these short little videos via social. You know, the one that went out with me on Friday. You know, Drew's got one, I think, that's out already this weekend.
Came out today.
Dr. Connor, we're going to kind of put a little message out with her. So
we'll have Rachel.
Yeah.
We'll have Rachel's out probably today or Monday. So Rachel's one of our receptionists. So we're really trying to give our clients a perception from all aspects of the practice that they would normally see.
Yeah.
And kind of like what each different section or department is doing differently.
Yeah, they're not able to come in the lobby or the exam room, but otherwise we're trying to maintain that contact. So maybe one last thing that I just kind of had jotted down to talk about is the importance of vaccinating against viral diseases, whether it's small animal, people, large animal. This, you know, is a very new virus. It is mutating as we speak. The scary thing about coronavirus, though, is it's infecting, I guess, more rapidly, more easily people. It's actually not they being the scientific
community
sure. working on this whole, you know, pandemic. They feel like it's not it is mutating, but it's not really having to mutate because it's doing such a good job.
Sure.
And so we have people in this practice and other practices, there's people, you know, whether it's human medicine or veterinary medicine, that are anti-vaccinators. Why, you know, my pet's not going to get exposed. I don't feel like I need to do this. This is not a problem. Well, one thing we're doing when we vaccinate the entire quote-unquote herd, whether that herd is large animals or it's the small animal population or it's the human population, when you vaccinate and don't allow this virus to propagate and get in the community or grow in the community, you keep it at bay, right?
Sure.
When you don't have a vaccine, look what has happened. Or if you have a vaccine and you don't vaccinate, large animal cattle, brucellosis, perfect example. We, as far as I know, have been able to eradicate brucellosis in the cattle population in the United States through heavy testing and heavy vaccinating. other vaccines, parvovirus,
so
much.
Yeah, so distemper virus in dogs.
Super rare, but still.
Huge in the 80s,
but
right?
Those diseases, parvo is still out there in the domestic dog population, and certainly any wild canines that we have.
Sure.
Distemper, much rarer than parvo. I don't think I've knowingly ever seen a case of distemper, but it's still out there in wildlife, so it's still present. And so we could have an outbreak of any of these diseases if they mutate enough and find their way, you know, more readily or heavily back into the domestic dog and cat population.
Sure.
So super scary stuff. I am, people that have listened to the podcast, we've been talking about this for three months.
Probably since January, yeah.
2 or 3 months. And we were pretty lighthearted about it. Like, oh, it's never going to be a problem. We don't feel like it's going to, you know, jump over here. If it does, it's not a big deal. It's only affecting the weak and the feeble and the elderly. Now we're seeing this is more than real.
Right.
It is daily life.
For sure.
And so we need to learn from our mistakes or learn from our current events. And I don't know. It's pretty eye-opening what we need to do related to, you know, to current vaccines that we have available. I do hope people will heed this warning.
Sure.
And I hope some good will come out of this horrible, horrible nightmare that we're in.
Yeah. So I want to say two things. So we did see this with the canine flu, right? We saw it kind of in, obviously, a much smaller population, but, you know, in Perry, Georgia, where all of the congregations of dogs were going for, help me out with my words here. Shows, a dog show was there, and then a bunch of dogs went from there, and then those dogs flew back, and then we saw it in, you know, Chicago. And so
now you're talking, this is three years ago,
back, yeah,
three,
probably
4 years ago,
maybe 2015, 2016, but we saw that, and then before that we saw a different strain of the flu vaccine. And so definitely it is out there, it does affect dogs. What I wanted to say real quick is that there's still no data, even though we are seeing two now cases of quote-unquote positive coronavirus testing in China in dogs. There's still no data from the American Veterinary Medical Association or anyone here that your dog is or cat is going to give you coronavirus, and
that they're going to get infected with it. I think they're going to they have the potential to carry it, which is why these two dogs, I thought it was only one, but they tested
positive. There's a second. There's a German Shepherd as of today or yesterday.
But I do think, yeah, the best we understand is that we're not getting cross-contamination at this point.
Yeah.
And so I would say you have enough to worry about.
Right.
Don't worry about your pet other than taking care of them.
Obviously take precautions,
yeah.
Right? Because there are certainly things that we don't know. But right now we're thinking that that is not a possibility. So what I want to urge is that I've seen lots and lots of foster recommendations. If you don't have a pet and you want to foster a pet, now is a good time. You certainly can bring a pet into your house and foster it. On the other side of that, we are seeing more and more people surrender their pets to animal shelters and things like that. I'm assuming because either they don't think that they can financially care for them or they're fearful that coronavirus is going to be transmitted.
I don't see a need to do that during these times.
I would urge people not to do that.
Yeah, I would think that would be one of the worst things that you could do for your pet.
For sure.
All right. Well, check in with us next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets. Also follow all the clinics on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and check out our blogs on the website at mygavet.com. Also, under resources, you can listen to the podcast online. I'm reading that directly off the paper. That made no sense to me.
Well, it made sense to me and I was listening to it, but you can find this podcast online on our website at mygavet.com or anywhere you'd like to get podcasts from. We're available in all those sources.
Okay. And lastly, and most importantly, remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Thanks for listening, guys.
Bye.